We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrix. Joining me today is John Fenech, founder and CEO of Fenech Consulting. How are you today, John?
Hey, good, Tom. How are you?
Excellent. Quite a lot to talk about and get to today. So why don't we start by getting a little bit about your background? I know you spent some time working for Sprott in the last couple of years here. So lay out a bit of your background for our listeners to kind of get some context on you.
Sure. So I started in the business in 1992 as an equity analyst for Merrill Lynch. I then moved on to JP Morgan, went back to Merrill, but I spent most of my career at big shops like that. Ended up getting the opportunity to run part of the US for Sprott in terms of distribution of their popular ETFs and funds, most notably PHYS and PSLV, as you probably know, Tom, the physical gold and silver products, and reported to Rick Rule. So that was a real thrill for me because Rick's one of my, you know, guys that I look up to. And did that in 16 and 17, was named part of the as part of the PM team as well. And I started my own performance in 2016 on the side. So I do have a 5-year track record that people can look at now on fenechconsulting.com, which we're really proud of. We're top decile for 1, 3, and 5 now through June 30th. So, you know, we're really, we've developed that, as we'll get into later, probably just through being active managers. I was on a David Lynn podcast with Kitco last month, and I was pointing out how at $47, GDXJ had actually lost you money by buying and holding over 5 years, which is terrible, right? It's like, that's not what we're in this for. We take a lot of risk on as clients. Why would you want to buy it at 51 in summer of 16 and hold it to 41 today? It's like, great, you know, I lost 20%. It's like, that's been the average experience I find from a lot of clients that contact us, is that they're overly loyal. And so it's like, you've got to know when to sell. And we think we do a really good job of educating clients about that. So to finish up, I've run my own shop now for the last 2 years. Precious Metal Summit in 2019 was the beginning of my business going out on my own. And it's been fantastic. I mean, I wish I did it years ago.
Absolutely. So of course, we're speaking today on Friday, the 27th of August. And of course, we had the FOMC meeting this morning. So Jerome Powell was quite dovish. And I just wanted to ask you if there was anything that surprised you about the meeting.
No, I mean, Powell's a former attorney. He's not a former economist. So, you know, I got a lot of negative comments, or concerned comments, I should say, from clients leading up to today, because they see guys like Bowerd from St. Louis and Kaplan from Dallas and all these guys go out there and try to talk up their opinion about things. And I say, look, these guys don't even vote this year. Who cares? Like, you need to focus on Powell. He's the guy you have to listen to. Make sure you mark your timer, your calendar, whatever you do. You know, make sure you're there at 10 a.m. Eastern today, because this is going to move markets. And sure enough, he just delivered a very straightforward, you know, kind of reiterating everything he said thus far. If you look back, Tom, at July 28th, we thought that Fed meeting was really supportive of our sector. We got a little love there between then and non-farm payrolls. And then that Friday, the first Friday of August, we got smoked. And that, to me, is an outlier event. Non-farm payrolls is definitely worth looking at. It's very important. But when you look at, you know, home prices declining, when you look at CPI remaining strong, these are all things that support our sector. It's like, I don't think that one number or metric like non-farm payrolls should be that destructive. So we were heavy buyers in August here in the mining sector. But the only thing that really surprised me about today was that he said towards the end of his remarks that the, quote, airline and hotel industries had recovered to like February 2020 levels, which I think is completely false. I spent most of my career on the road, so I've spent, you know, many, many nights in hotels that I wish I was home in my bed, but 2,000 nights on the road at least, and many, you know, hundreds of flights. And you know, what I have seen is hotel rates stay steady, you know, versus year over year. but you're getting much less as a consumer now, right? Because housekeeping is like 50% shuttered. The restaurants are closed, the bars are closed, the gym's closed. It's like you're not getting any value as a consumer anymore. So I think at some point next year, the consumer is going to put their foot down and say, I'm not paying these prices anymore. You know, we'll see. But I think that that is just a false comment, because when I talk to hotel managers and get an idea of their, you know, how much capacity they have that night, they're usually telling me 20 to 40%. And that's not good. If you have 200 rooms and you've got, you know, 40 full, who cares? It's that you're not going to make your revenue numbers.
Absolutely. So, John, as you mentioned, non-farm payroll numbers, that's another metric that you track. So can you explain the significance of this number to some of our audience that might not be familiar with it?
Yeah, it's the first Friday of every month, and it comes out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern all the time. It's basically the most followed metric for job growth in the U.S., right? So like you heard Jerome Powell say today many times, our maximum employment number, right? So that's what they're looking at. They want to see a strong non-farm payrolls number of like 1 million plus. And we got really close in August. And that's why our sector tanked, right? Because usually you have a correlation between a higher non-farm and interest rates going up eventually, right? Because the Fed will get emboldened and say, okay, well, hey, we've got four or five good numbers in a row now. We can feel more comfortable about being hawkish and talking up, you know, raising interest rates. So to me, that's always something that I look at very closely every month, along with CPI and a few other things. But it is the most difficult number, I think anyone would say, to predict, because like last month, we got a weak ADP number on Wednesday. That's the precursor to non-farm. It happens the first Wednesday of the month. And that would indicate a weaker non-farm number, which didn't happen, right? So they're not... you can't assume a good ADP or a bad ADP is going to mean a good non-farm or a bad non-farm. It's really frustrating. So it's just something to keep an eye on. And as I've said to clients, like this is one metric the Fed is looking at, not all of them. And I think that, you know, Powell completely came through with that message today.
So how do you position yourself coming into, let's say, the FOMC meeting like today? Were there any other indicators that you look at to speculate on the direction of the metals on days like this?
Today was a really interesting day because we were up a lot in 2016. We were up 149%. And the reason we were up so much was that I took 50% of our chips off the table the first week of August of 2016 because I didn't trust Fisher. I didn't trust Yellen. I thought they were going to be hawkish. They were at Jackson Hole. That started, as you remember, a 2.5-year downturn in the mining sector. So today was really scary. I told my family I was really, you know, feeling a little bit trepidatious this morning because we were fully, you know, 4% cash going into this. And usually I'd be way higher cash. I just felt that Powell had his back against the wall here and he had to do the right thing because of various things, but also the Delta variant. I mean, how would you like logically think that this person is going to derail a 17-month recovery with Delta running rampant, right? It's like, come on. It didn't make any sense to me. So we put our money where our mouth is and we're sitting pretty today as a result.
So I've heard you say before, John, that you look at inflation and you think it's way less important than certain other things, for example, the bond market. So what kinds of signs do you look for in the bond market and what do they mean?
So bonds, I don't track as much as maybe your average PM. I mean, I look at the TLT every day, which is the 20-year ETF. And you know, I keep an eye on bond yields. I think that's important. But I keep an eye more, Tom, on the dollar than anything else, because you do have times where like fall of 18, the dollar will run up with gold because they're both safe haven bets, but typically they're counterintuitive. So like dollar up, gold down or vice versa. So, you know, today you saw the dollar weaken right out of the gate on Powell's comments. And that was supportive of our sector, right? Gold broke 1800. So I think there's a much higher correlation to a weaker dollar and a higher gold price, which equates to, you know, higher silver, usually higher mining stocks, just like we saw last summer. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I look at the bond market, but the main things I'm looking at right now are GDP, CPI, and non-farm payrolls. Those are the big three.
Excellent. So it seems like only price action is one of the only things that gets investors interested in gold as of late. Are there any other factors that have changed your view on gold at all? And what other fundamental factors could we even ask for as a tailwind to push gold higher right now?
Yeah. So the way I view the market, Tom, is like I have a zero position in gold right now. I do believe that it was very bullish action to see the non-farm, you know, malaise followed by some Asian and European panic selling over that weekend, remember, in early August. And then we had that open that was crazy on that Monday, all the way down to $16.76 an ounce. But what I was telling clients was like this gap got filled, meaning that whole price action from $16.76 back to $1,800 today got filled up. I mean, like that's really, really positive. And so I've been saying, look, there's just an absolute disconnect between the gold price and gold miners right now. You want to buy the miners because we're going to have a day like today, the 27th. And so we had that day. I think we could follow through in the miners next week, and I think we could follow through in September. We have the two of the five biggest mining conferences anywhere starting September 8th through the 14th. And one of my things, as you know, Tom, is to talk to CEOs. I've talked to 18 CEOs in the last 5 days, just this week. They are pumped for Precious Metal Summit in Beaver Creek, and they're pumped for Denver Gold. And I've talked to the coordinators of both of those events, and they're expecting very good attendance. So I think that we're going to see, you know, people take a stand here. I'm an advocate for you know, CEOs doing what like Keith Neumeyer is doing at AG with Mexico right now. It's like, hey, let's stand up for ourselves. You see Freeland doing that all the time at Ivanhoe. It's like, let's take a stand and say, this is not going to happen again and again and again to us. Like there's just a lot of short interest out there. I think a lot of it's naked, and I think that they're going to get smoked. You know, I really do. They've had a really good run here for many, many months, right? It's been an 11-month downturn since last September's highs. So I think it's our time.
So I want to go back to something you were saying, John, about not having a position in physical gold. How do you view some gold stocks being a better value at times than the actual bullion itself? And what role does, let's say, physical gold play in your portfolio, if at all?
Sure. So we'll buy gold in our portfolio if we thought there was like we were in a war with someone, like, you know, like major, you know, when not a small war. We would buy it as portfolio insurance if we saw some black swan event. I don't see that happening right now. It's just not as compelling to me, Tom, because I can make 3%, 5%, 7% on that. If I buy Newmont at $57 today with a 4% yield, I'm getting paid to wait, right? It's like their cash flow is great. Their net debt to EBITDA is great. Their yield is very strong. It's one of the highest yielding S&P stocks, right? So why wouldn't I buy NEM at 57 and it's going back to 70? So I can make whatever that is, right? 30%, 20% instead of 5 or 7. So that's the way I look at it is gold miners have inherent leverage to the gold price. Silver, same thing. Silver companies have that leverage to silver even more so. So we're interested in buying miners when they're bombed out like this. And then in last summer, we were heavy sellers. We thought that, you know, Warren Buffett buying Barrick was almost like the perfect bell ringing to sell, you know, because it's like, here's a guy who absolutely hates gold buying into our sector for the first time at like pretty much the all-time high. So, you know, we're very contrarian in the way we look at things.
Absolutely. And it's before we hit record here, you and I were talking a little bit about that, about basically the controlling investor psychology and not being interested in something just because the price has run up. So how did you develop that mindset? Is it something that you've just been able to figure out over time, you know, in a way go against your immediate gut reaction to seeing something run up like that? How have you developed that?
If I understand the question correctly, it's how did I develop my methodology for investing? Or
absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, like I think gold's going higher, right? It's at 1800. I think it's going to test that high that we had last year. Absolutely. But it's just a less compelling trade to me than to buy something like Newmont or any gold miner, right? Because there's just so much leverage there. There's 3x, 4x leverage to the gold price. So, you know, if it was last summer, we would have said, you know, something different than this, meaning like a lot of things had gotten ahead of themselves. Again, we go back to that relative strength index number. A lot of RSIs on stocks were at 70, 80 plus. That's when you usually sell, and you usually buy when RSIs get into the teens or the 20s because they're completely bombed out. And that's where we've been over the last couple of weeks here in August. So our methodology is to buy low and sell high. It's like, I'm a Peter Lynch guy. Like, I'm going to do what I do well, which is energy and mining, and I'm going to do nothing else. Like, that's all I'm concerned with. I am building a short list of some names like cruise ships and hotels and stuff, because I think that if Delta variant continues globally, like, some of these names are just way ahead of themselves. But, you know, we haven't shorted much at all this year at all. We clearly are not shorting the mining space.
So, John, you mentioned that you're a very active, almost a trader in the mining sector here. So how do you go about, let's say, determining sell targets? Do you base most everything on RSI, or how do you look at that?
There's a good website out there called stockta.com, which is just a technical site. We would encourage people to look at that, put a ticker in, and then on the left-hand margin of the screen, you'll see support and resistance on the stock. So we use that and other tools to kind of gauge where, you know, support and resistance is, Tom. We look at RSI as well, which is at the bottom of that screen once you type in the ticker. So we get both of those metrics from that website, which is pretty cool. But no, I mean, I'm just saying about the RSIs as kind of a layman's kind of like, you know, approach to looking at the space, you know, higher RSIs being, you know, overbought, low RSIs being oversold, excuse me. So yeah, I think right now you've got a tremendous opportunity ahead of you for now to November, right? Because going into today, we were thinking, oh gosh, you know, we're going to get this taper talk. Then we've got September 22nd. That's when the bomb gets dropped. No, like, that's not what happened today. Now he's pushed the market is feeling he's pushed the can down the road to November, which is fantastic, right? That gives us a lot of runway as mining investors between now and November to make a lot of money. And so I would, you know, we can discuss a few names in a little bit, but I'm gravitating towards things with near-term news, meaning it could be drill results, it could be a spin-off, it could be they're going to get taken out. I mean, I'm looking at catalysts for the next 1 to 3 months. So I am very impatient as an investor. I don't like to stick around for things for years, like we talked about with GDXJ. I'm going to sit here and do this and, you know, hope that, you know, everything's going to work. No, it doesn't. You have to be active. And that is a perfect example. If someone were to compare my performance over the last 5 years to GDXJ, you're going to see a tremendous amount of alpha, meaning upside there over that ETF, because we've been extremely active for 5 years. It takes a lot of time and work. So,
How do you think about structuring your portfolio, John? Are you trying to manage some of the risk of being heavy on juniors by also holding some mid-tiers that are, let's say, key takeover targets?
Yeah, we want mid-tiers on a day like today, right? They're the components in the GDX or the GDXJ. They're getting smoked going into today because they are in those ETFs. So every time, the average investor knows this, but let's say, you know, Joe Foster at VanEck, which manages those two ETFs, gets, you know, all these sell orders. He's got to meet redemptions, meaning he's got to sell a piece of each of those holdings to meet client redemptions, right? So like on days like, you know, previous to today in August, where there's a lot of selling pressure, those names are getting artificially beaten down. On days like today, there's a bid on GDX and J, right? So like now all these names are getting bid up. So we like a couple of mid-tiers, you know, that are not huge positions for us, but, you know, we've had that have just been beaten up like beyond belief, you know? And going back, just to give your listeners an example of this isn't something we're completely in love with, but BTG is B2 Gold. It's a good example of just how we think, right? So like, here's a gold company with a low AISC, all-in sustaining cost per ounce. It's below 850, I think, and gold's at 1800. So how are you not going to print money in a stock like that over time, right? Like if gold remains steady at 1800, that's how we think about the world, Tom. It's like this thing is going to print money because they have $950 an ounce margins, right? Mm-hmm. Newmont, same thing, $1,000 AISC. they have $800 margins. You know, if you look back at a chart of Newmont back in 2011, when everyone loved it at like 70, 80 bucks, it had like $150, $200 margins. So now you've got 4X, 5X the margins and no one wants it. It's like, okay, we'll take it. So yeah, I think BTG, NEM, these are good examples of things that we like, you know, we'll look at in the mid-tier space or large cap space when it comes to gold stocks.
Yeah, it seems really interesting to try and identify that disconnect versus sentiment when gold was popular and sexy, right?
Yeah. Yep. This is classic, like, you know, everyone loved the sector last summer. No one loves it now. This is exactly when we put all our chips in, if we get the go-ahead from the Fed. Okay. So we were like 4%-ish cash going into today. We normally would have been at least 15 to 20% cash because we don't really trust the Fed. This time around, I just said, look, I feel like Powell's got to do this. And I felt very strongly about that. So
are you only focused on developers and juniors, or are there any, let's say, royalty plays that you like? Is that a model that fits into your thinking? Is that something you like?
Royalty plays are great for longer term holds and for I think for us right now, we own Nomad, which is going to be listed on the NYSE on August 31st. And that was one of the reasons we bought into it, is that, you know, we've kept in touch with management. They have a plan in place. They've got eight producing, you know, mines right now within the portfolio, which I don't think the average investor even understands. And so like things like that that are flying under the radar versus something like Franco, right? Mm-hmm. FNV. We wouldn't buy Franco here because it's just not as interesting to us. It's already run up a lot, right? Like it's a great looking chart. But we would just say, hey, let's bottom fish a Nomad here or something like that, that has the same business model, but is just completely unloved.
Right.
So to answer your question, we own a little bit of royalty exposure, but we're mostly heavily into juniors as of this summer because they've been so crushed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like there's so many compelling buys out there in the junior explorer space in particular right now. So, you know, you have to talk to CEOs to understand. If I talk to a CEO 30 times and the 31st time he's super excited, like then I know without him having to tell me anything, like here's a guy who's very measured, but now he's really excited. Like, you know what I mean? This is the kind of information that I can impart upon my alert clients. And what I do, Tom, is I email them this information. I don't withhold anything. Like when I say, hey, I just talked to so-and-so from this company, it goes out within 10 minutes. Like, so, you know, our service is different than most in that we're real time. And as a client, you can choose to be getting every trade, you know, we call that active alerts, or you can choose to get passive alerts, which is just getting notifications from us when we do 25% or more on a buy or sell. So if we sold half of our Newmont, you'd get an email, that kind of thing.
Right. So what about silver, John? Do you think that the silver squeeze this year, or that started at the beginning of this year, has had an appreciable effect on tightening the physical silver supply market?
I may have to punt on that question just because I don't get involved too deeply with that. I mean, I've been very vocal, Tom, over my career to say you want to own stuff like PSLV as opposed to SLV because you can get physical delivery if you so choose. But I also have been telling people like to get physical delivery is a process and it costs a lot of money. So it's like not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And coins, you know, like last summer had these gigantic premiums attached to them, right? So like to buy the physical coins, you know, like now would make sense, but like last summer made no sense to me. Right. So I'd rather just own good silver companies that were cheap last summer. And I still feel the same right now. Like we were buying heavily into Silvercorp here at $4 recently. And now they come out with news, which I didn't have any idea about, that they were going to do a 4% buyback of shares because their stock's so cheap. So a company like that is saying, hey, we don't find enough compelling opportunities to go buy out there right now. We're just going to go buy our own stock because we're so cheap. Mm-hmm. That's great. So, you know, I wrote on silver for Sprott. I was part of the PM team there. I'm very measured about silver though. Like when you look at my comments, I've said all year, we haven't broke $30. Don't talk to me until we break $30. Michael Oliver just went on a show and talked about $200 silver. It's like, no offense to Michael, but how is that helping the client, right? Like that is not even close to reality. We've never cracked 50 ever. Like, so why don't we just take every day as it comes, right? That's how I look at the world, Tom, is like, we have to get through 28 resistance on silver, then 30, and then we can talk like upside. But like for now, I'm looking at those kind of like as major hurdles to get through before we can have a party.
Right. So basically you're not interested in silver equities or silver miners until at least 30 as well.
No, I didn't mean to come across that way. I'm bottom fishing things like SBM, which is Silver Corp. AUMN is my biggest holding in silver. It's gotten completely crushed by a portfolio manager we compete with, along with a Seeking Alpha author that both have never spoken to the company, but have very strong opinions, right? With many followers, like the combined followers on both those guys is over 30,000 people. So when you take a stock down from 71 to 46, yeah, we're really interested, right? Because a lot of this is artificial in our opinion and temporary. Mm-hmm. That company has telegraphed publicly that they are considering a restart of Velardania, which is their biggest asset in Mexico. And I was in the stock in 2015 when that news came out that they had taken the mine off care and maintenance, which is exactly where it is right now. And they restarted the mine and the thing went from 50 cents to $1.53 in less than a month. That is not going to happen this time, in my opinion. You're not going to get that same torque, but you're definitely going to get some love. And so in talking to the company, I feel like they are on track to restart the mine in Q4.
Excellent. So what other metals do you spend time focusing on, John? Are there any other metals that you look at that are even as attractive as gold to you?
Yeah, I mean, we think silver is the best of the bunch right now in terms of buying any type of metal straight up. And you can do that through a number of ways, as we discussed. We think that palladium is always compelling because there is a very short supply of palladium and it's in every catalytic converter and every car in the world, right? So like there's an absolute need for that. When you look at the supply demand issue, it's, you know, 81% of supply comes from Russia and South Africa. Both countries have, you know, geopolitical issues, as well as, you know, South Africa strikes like clockwork every 6 to 12 months. So you've got these supply disruptions outside of COVID that exist all the time in palladium, in our view. So we love palladium, small cap, juniors, name it. You know, it's like a lot of our portfolio is in palladium stocks right now because they're really beaten up. Copper, I think last year, you know, if you look at my interview with Bill Powers in May of last year, we were bulls on copper as early as late May. So we were, you know, putting our money where our mouth was then. We were buying the bigger cap stuff like FCX. And then we got into the junior stuff because it was completely unloved, even though copper was breaking out, you know, it had broken all resistance levels. So by October, I'd say we were in a lot of names that no one's ever heard of before, like Copper Bank and Granite and things that really worked out nicely for us on a percentage basis, right? So that's how we look at things, Tom. I mean, I appreciate you asking us about our methodology because many interviewers don't do that. And we look at it like, hey, if we can take a stock from 10 cents to 20 cents, we're thrilled. We're out. Like we're going to take that 100% gain many times. And then we're going to buy it back at 13 and write it back to 20. And then we're out again. Like, you know, it's like we're not going to sit there forever and just, you know, hold shares. And I'm very vocal about this with CEOs. Like if we're up 100%+, we're probably going to take some or all of it and leave for a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is a great example. I talked to Tim Johnson about this at Granite. The ticker is GCXXF. We've had a good relationship now from November to today, so almost a year. Tim is like an advocate for taking some gains if you need to, right? Like so we started a position at 9 cents last November. We rode it all the way to 22 or 23 here this year. We sold our entire position. We just bought back in this week at 14. You know, it's like, I'm going to ride that back into the 20s. It's going there, right? So like, that's kind of how we think about things. We're not, I wouldn't say active traders, but we are traders in the sense that we're going to buy and sell things a couple times a year, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. To just really try and capture the upside and not hopefully any of the downside, right?
Yeah, it doesn't always work. I mean, we're not perfect. The numbers are on the website. Like, you know, we're through June, we're 29% ahead of GDXJ though, year to date. So like we're doing something right. Like, I mean, we grind it out. You know, it takes a lot of work to get a couple percent here, a couple percent there, but that's what we try to do. We're not going to always be able to do this. I mean, I think that within 3 to 5 years, I'm probably going to hang it up on this side of the business because it is a lot of work and I've been doing this for a lot of years. So, you know, I think this is go time though. This is the time that you have to be interested. Like if you were interested last summer as an investor, you should really be interested right now because there's so much value.
So John, I know you're not really focused on the crypto space, but do you think they've taken some of the speculative capital out of the gold space?
Yep, for sure. I mean, this is an opportunity cost world that we're living in terms of finance. So this year, you know, lithium, LIT has run up huge. Hydrogen had a great run. Bitcoin's had a great run. You name it, right? It's like there's so many things for the investor to look at right now. Not even mentioning Wall Street Bets and Reddit and the stuff with AMC and GameStop. And like, it's just, you know, there's so many places to make money this year. So that's part of the problem for our sector is just lack of understanding coupled with lack of interest, right? Which creates an opportunity for someone that knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the reasons that you don't focus on the crypto markets? Is it just that they're it's just not something that you've come up with and know very, very well?
Well, first off, I think I do a better job than most of my peers in that we are not just gold and silver all day long. You know, like if you look at, I'm not going to name names, but there's so many really smart people that just buy gold and silver stocks, right? And that's what their newsletters are all about. We're doing copper, we're doing palladium, we're doing lithium, we're doing a lot of different things because that's how we feel we can be of service to clients is that we're looking at all commodities in the metal space and trying to be relevant. But to answer your question, you know, the Bitcoin thing is real. I thought last year when PayPal started accepting Bitcoin, that was like really interesting to me. So we bought some PayPal. We didn't buy Bitcoin, you know, we're equity guys. So like that's part of the problem. I'm not interested really in currencies. But what worries me about Bitcoin is something that, like the same thing that would worry me about Ethereum or any of these cryptos is number one, they're all in regulated markets. Number two, there's a lot of whales in certain meta, certain currencies like this. And if they wake up on the wrong side of the bed, you could be down 5 to 10% on a Monday morning coming off a weekend just because Elon Musk was on, you know, SNL talking something about, you know, his feelings on Ethereum. And it's like, no, I'm not interested in that. So, you know, I kind of look at how can I have an edge in what I do? And I don't think I have an edge where I'm at the, you know, at the whim of someone waking up with a bad mood.
Interesting. So in that kind of vein, John, where do you stand on the, let's say the metals manipulation question? Does it matter really if you're able to still make money trading the gold and silver equities?
The manipulation question I'm also going to punt because I have feelings about it, but here's how I feel about it, Tom. Like in a nutshell, like I'm a small investor and I have influence, you know, you have influence. It's like we're still small players in the space, right? We're not a Merrill, we're not a Morgan, we're not going to move anything ourselves, right? So like we can complain about manipulation as much as we want, but look at what's actually happened, right? Like if you're a trader at one of these banks, you get your hand slapped with a $5 or $10 or $20 million fine and no one cares. It's like, how is that going to affect Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan's bottom line, right? Like it's very frustrating. I admit it, but I want to focus on positive things I can do for my clients and not worry so much about things I can't control.
Perfect. Excellent, John. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up here?
Yeah. So, I would encourage clients to contact me if they want some guidance here. I think this is, as I mentioned, a great time to start, you know, getting more invested. Our alert service is just one of the services we offer. We offer phone calls with me directly. We offer portfolio reviews. You know, we're trying to sit down with a client, and you know, try to save them some pain, right? Like a lot of times you have an emotional attachment to a stock. Maybe it was gifted to you. Maybe you know someone at the company. It's like, you have to look at it pragmatically, have someone like me look at it pragmatically and say, like, that stock was great a year or two ago, but now it may not be as great and there's better opportunities, and let's sell some of that and buy some of this.
Perfect. Of course, you're available at Fennec Consulting, F-E-N-E-C-K consulting.com, right?
That's right. Yep.
Excellent. John, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Appreciate it.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.